We know that no one can succeed alone. Since the Second World War, more than 120,000 Norwegian women and men have served shoulder to shoulder with friends and allied forces. They have participated in almost 100 missions, fighting for values on which we build our societies. A bridge of trust has been built between our brothers in arms and our allied countries. Some soldiers did not make it home, and many suffered injuries. A few have been honored as war heroes. None should be forgotten.
Welcome to another episode in Friends and Allies here at Et Øyeblikk, en evighet. This time we are moving to Ukraine, quite a special place at this moment in time with the ongoing war between Ukraine and Russia. And with me today I have one of the soldiers standing at the very front line in Ukraine. And a warm welcome to you, Yuri. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you end up in the fighting?
That's a question to Mr. Putin, because, of course, until the big invasion from Russia in 2022, I was never thinking I could be in the army. I wasn't in the army. I used to be a journalist for many years. It was my first love. And I ended this great job as a chief editor of Journalist Investigative Bureau. And it was the time of very corrupted president who in the end escaped to Russia. His name is Mr. Yanukovych. And he was, in fact, an ugly gangster who was trying to rob and to repress Ukraine. And as always, we apprised. He fled to Russia. And that moved me to politics, because I was among organizers of this big event. We call it Revolution of Dignity, because it was a time when a lot of people in Ukraine understand that they are responsible for everything in their life, and there are no walls, there are no jails that cannot be ruined by people. It was a moment of awakening, and I think it was a very big preparation for current Ukraine resistance and strongness, because people don't think about anyone who can defend and should defend themselves for themselves. So it was a very big change for the country and for me. I was elected to our parliament in 2014 and served 5 years very proudly as people representatives. In the parliament, I was elected as a chair of our anti-corruption committee. And because I used to be a journalist, an investigative journalist, we established a very great transparency in our country for officials. First, we obliged all officials, starting from president till police officers, to declare all assets and big expenditures through internet. At the moment, before the war, big war started, we had 1 million official declarations on internet. And it was a very powerful tool for journalists, for citizens, to clean the country from corruption, from illegal enrichment. Also, we established new institutions, especially for fighting corruption. One of that institution played a very important role in last Ukrainian political events. The powerful head of presidential office stepped down, was dismissed because of investigation from National Anti-Corruption Bureau. It was my first law in the parliament to give this bureau independence and strongness. Of course, it's funny when in 10 years, on the front line, you are witnessing such a big consequences of your action. And I am very proud that this fight also is going on in Ukraine. we are a nation that fighting themselves, defending itself from the big invasion, from the aggressor as Russia, outside the country, and in the same time from remains of previous occupations inside the country. Because for centuries under Russian occupation, occupation by other empires, corruption was a tool for relieving a pressure from foreign government to your family. It wasn't a problem, it was a solution. And it's a big challenge for us when we became independent to understand that that's not about them, that's about us. And I am very happy that this fight also is going on. This is an extremely hard fight to become free people after you were slaves for centuries. And I'm really happy that we do have successes on this fight too.
So you have a fighting on many planes, many levels, like you have the fight against the Russians now in your country, and also within to stop corruption and to liberate yourselves.
Absolutely. And for me, this is like a big family story, because when Putin troops invaded us in February 2022, I joined the army immediately. And last year, I became UAV battalion commander. And of course, I was concentrated on the battlefield, on my operations. And then the president office decided to withdraw independence from anti-corruption bodies because they were investigating powerful figures in president's office, including the head of the office. And the reaction from the society was a very big problem, because a lot, maybe a majority of active citizens are fighting like me. They are soldiers, officers. They cannot actually protest. They should concentrate on the battlefield. Another challenge was we are in a big war for our survival, and it's hard to protest in that time against your own government. And it's very risky. And fortunately, it was a miracle for us, because not we, not other adults, but our children apprised. We had a small youth Maidan, as we call it. Maidan means a big square in Ukraine. And many, majority of protesters last summer were youth from 14 till 20 years old. In my 14 and 20, I never thought about things like independence of anti-corruption bodies, but they did. And I have four children, and three of them were on protest, and I was very proud of them. And it changed a lot inside the country, and government started to clean itself, and anti-corruption bodies received more support, and I would say more independence, not only legal but also psychological. And that's why they are conducting their investigations further, and we again have a very good success in this battlefield. And maybe the main success for me as a father, it's our children awareness and the level of responsibility when adults are on front line. Children save the country from very big challenge and very big problem. So Ukraine is a very proud place to be now, and I am happy that I am part of this.
But still, it's a quite vicious war going on. How did you experience the very attack in February 22? How did you react? You told us you immediately went to the army. And how was the fighting in the beginning?
First, in previous months, I had a big argument with my beautiful wife and her mother, because I was insisting that the danger is coming and we should be prepared. And a day before the invasion, I literally grabbed my children, placed them in our car and took them to western part of Ukraine, border with the European Union, and simply rented a room in a hotel for them. And then invasion started. Part of argument was because my wife is a journalist too. She's a big star in our TV. And she insisted in this argument that she should be on her position. So she was on air when first missiles were sent against Ukraine. She reported about the invasion, and I was very proud of her. And our children were in like 600 kilometers from us. And I returned in the same day immediately to my unit. I had a unit already, because as a guy that predicted that the invasion is preparing by Putin, I joined our territorial defense unit in half a year before the invasion. So I had a uniform, I had a rifle, and I had some trainings with other civilians that joined territorial defense. At the moment, we actually then had about 100 people for a few million city of Kyiv, our capital. But we were, I think, a very good example. And in the first night of the attack, we received our first order to defend our airport against possible paratroopers. Then in 10 days, we were sent to one of the key positions in Kyiv battle. It was a bridge between small city of Irpin that in fact saved Ukrainian capital from western direction. And now, unfortunately, well-known town of Bucha. And the bridge between them was our position, and we were fighting there until the victory of Kyiv battle, which I think now, still now, is the main victory of Ukrainian history, in Ukrainian history, because we saved our independence in one battle.
How close came the Russians to take Kyiv?
Between the center of the city and our position on this bridge, it's like 17 kilometers, I think. So it's very close. Now in drone wars, it's nothing. It's like shooting distance.
How much has the war changed from that the days in 22 and today, when you are at the front line with the drones and you see how that development has gone? Can you describe how different it is?
As normal people, before the invasion, we saw war only in movies. Let's recall some famous movies like
Saving Private Ryan.
I would say number 24 about
number 24 of Gunnar Sønsteby.
Yeah. This was very similar to war that we faced in 2022. Artillery was the king of war. Mortars were our main problem, and killers. no air reconnaissance. So it was like traditional war. And now everything was changed, and was changed by ourselves. People in many countries, I think why Ukraine is still alive. And of course, there is a very big moral explanation about our resistance, about blood that motivates us to be stronger and to be more independent, to be more decisive. But technological answer is very important. This is another key explanation why we are still alive and free, because we invented drones as a weapon. In 2022, it was Mavic, a famous Chinese drones that mostly was used for filming private events like wedding or birthdays. And we started to use it as a very powerful reconnaissance tool to see enemy's position totally in 5 kilometers from the front line, 24 hours. And then we started to use it as a grenade dropper. And now this is the main killer, one of the main killers of enemy's infantry. These drones from weddings. So this technology led us to many other changes. We started to produce FPV drones as kamikaze weapon. FPV drones also existed before the invasion as drones for sports. So sportsmen competed which is other, who is faster. And we decided, look, this is a very good tool to replace mines and artillery shells, because artillery shells cannot maneuver. They cannot be so precise as these drones. And these drones are cheaper than any artillery shell. Let's use it for it. Then we started to use big agricultural drones that before the invasion were used for supervising fields. And we used them as night bombers, precise night bombers. These drones are main killer of Russian tanks and artillery now. We eliminate them in 30 kilometers from the front line using these drones. They are so powerful that Russians started to call them Baba Yaga. This is like an old witch from Russian tales. And this old lady is doing very well. And that's the reason why we are much more smaller country with no huge oil resources and other things that are peaceful in normal times, that doesn't want to invade anyone and doesn't want to fight with anyone. That's why we are still resistant, and that's why we are still very happy to celebrate Christmas on our free land, to mark our Independence Day in August. It's something now. It was always a very important day, but now it's like religious date. So this is a very good answer to all these big threats from such a neighbor. Use new technologies simply to stop this stupid bloody power.
How does war affect you personally? Do you have any personal experiences from the war?
Of course, a lot. It was absolutely big surprise, the biggest surprise in my life to become a military guy. And now for me, it's quite hard to imagine not to be in the army, because now I am a captain. I started the war as a soldier, private. Now I run a big bunch of very talented pilots. Now this is my life, and this is my job, and this is my future, I think, in nearest time. Actually, the biggest lesson was the same as it was from our previous revolutions. People are incredibly strong and people are incredibly talented. And ordinary people that were ordinary people before the invasion, they are now epic heroes. This is what I like in the story of Mr. Sonstubi. He used to be a bank account.
Yes, in right? the very beginning, yeah.
Absolutely. And now he's your national hero and a very good example for us. The same story with the whole Ukrainian armed forces. My first deputy, the head of staff, he used to be a successful businessman before the war. My best interceptor pilot used to be a sales manager. My best kamikaze pilot used to be a trainer in sport club with the good environment and that. The head of my intelligence team used to be a school teacher. He was a history teacher in the school of my son. I think this was the most important lesson he gave to his pupil. If we are talking about the biggest challenge, it wasn't the start of war. It wasn't fallen friend. Maybe the biggest challenge was and is my son's decision to join the army too. Because when the invasion started, he was 14, and he was a big fan and player in football. He was dreaming about footballist career and playing football all his childhood. Another idea was to study history in the university after he will graduate from the school. And then the invasion started. He saw my way, our technological war that we started to invent. And he changed his mind. He actually ended his football career. He started to trainings as youth in forests with guns and so on from veterans. And then he started to study math and physics, not history, because he understood how important it is in the modern war. And in 17, he started to be a drone manufacturer in a very good company of youth. And last year, in 18, he joined the army. And of course, I'm very proud of him. But in the same time, it's a big challenge because a lot of Ukrainian fathers joined the army for not letting war to be a thing for our children. I'm not successful in it. From other side, I really cannot imagine he escaped into another country or he will be in another mood, that this is not his obligation, this is not his thing. So I'm really proud of him. But of course, it's very hard for any parent to have a child on the battlefield.
How do you view the losses that you take? I mean, even that the reports about lots of Russians getting killed.
It's very, very natural during the war. These, can't even say people, these invaders came to our land. When we liberated Kyiv region in this successful Kyiv battle, and we saw all war crimes in this Bucha place, in other places, it was a big shock for us. Girls were raped, people were killed just for fun, civilians. A lot of houses were robbed, of course. And it's very natural in such circumstances not to have emotions about your enemy, because this is like a monster who is literally going to eat you and eat your family, eat your life. And it's very, very natural to stop this monster. And that's what we are doing. Of course, much more biggest and very hurtful challenge is losing friends. For me, losing my subordinates, who of course, were all my friends, because we brotherhood at war. But during the war, you have this habit to prohibit yourself to think about it. I loved this guy. Now he is dead. Of course, I think like thousands of times what I should have done in different way to save his life. But if there were no chances, stop thinking about it, because you have another guys who are alive, and you have operations, you have battlefield, you have to save your family, your life, your country, your independence. That's a big job, the biggest one in my life. So I think we will be crying a lot about all of them until after the war will end. I think we will be all crying maybe for years. But in the same time, I think it will be happy years.
How close are you to the fighting where you are? How close are the missiles or drones going after you?
Well, honestly, I'm the commander, so the burden of battlefield for me, it's more about responsibility than physical danger. Of course, I join my different teams all the time to understand more what's going on the battlefield, what are the, our challenges. But my main responsibility is to plan, is to manage, is to select right people, right weapon, right plan for this operation. Of course, a year ago, we survived a big missile attack on our command center. It was an Iskander Russian big rocket, and it was a shock. Maybe after that, there were less dangerous attacks from drones, including Shahids. But during the war, you are becoming, in good sense, an animal. You are feeling, you are hearing, you are seeing danger. But this is not like rational or emotional state. Your instinct lead you on the battlefield. So we are okay. Psychologically, again, we are doing the very important job. We feel that. And this is the most natural position to be for me, to be in our army.
You mentioned your command center.
Yeah.
And that's quite a funny story, because actually you named your command center after Gunnar Sønsteby, the Norwegian liberation hero.
Absolutely. Actually, why I am here, because I never visited Norway and had no ties with your beautiful country before the Russian invasion. And this is a good thing about so big challenges and so hard times, that these hard times, in fact, unite good people, unite people that sure that we should be free, we should have dignity, we should not be slaves again. And now I do have a lot of friends from Norway who physically visited us in Zaporizhia region. This is a very important southern part of our battlefront, and presented us a lot of gifts, and main gifts during the war are drones, vehicles, resources for fighting. And it was a real miracle for us, and a big honor to source such new friends. And one of them is your politician, Peter Frolich, and he founded a very big now NGO, Free to Ukraine, that helps a lot. And we became real friends, not only on battlefield. And once Peter gifted me this story about your national legend and recommended to see this movie, number 24, it's fine, and I liked it. And after that, I decided in honor of all this support from Norwegian people, in fact, from your society, not only from government, and in honor of the same challenges and the same values. I now understand Mr. Sønsteby times much more better, because we also faced invasion, occupation, and new Nazis on our land. So it unites us, and we decided to name our common center, gave it a call name Gunnar. It's good, it's short, and we use it in our communication, radio talks with our pilots, and we changed, because of Russian air attacks, we changed places for our common center. But the call name is still Gunnar, and we are very proud to have it and very proud of history behind this name.
In Friends and Allies, we hear the stories of some of our closest supporters, reliving with them some of their most intense moments, et øyeblikk, en evighet.